You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Stephen L. Bridges. Stephen, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd. It's my pleasure.
Stephen, let's talk about what you're working on at the moment. What's happening? You're in Lansing, Michigan. What's happening there? What are you involved in?
Well, let's see. At the moment, I am looking forward to my next major exhibition, which opens on May 30th here at the museum. And that exhibition is titled Seeds of Resistance. So a lot of the ways that I like to work, particularly in this context, being in mid-Michigan at a university art museum, is to try and tailor the conversations that we're having in the museum with, to some degree, the local context, the university context in which we exist, while also addressing more broader national and certainly also international concerns. So with this exhibition, it has perhaps as you can tell from the title, kind of ecological focus, thinking about practices of seed banking, the genetic information encoded within seeds, but how those things are also tied to cultural values. And so the loss of biodiversity, the loss of heirloom and antique seed varietals is also a loss of cultural information and values that are tied to those things. So the exhibition itself will involve a number of contemporary artists that are interested in these ideas, as well as archival documentary materials related to the history of the university, and then a number of projects that kind of look forward to speculative futures, you know, based on the current moment that we are in.
So that's so interesting, especially seed banking, which I never knew that much about. But this, so all of these artists, and you talked about a speculative future, which I'm interested in too, because this is all based around this, the theme, as you're saying. What is a speculative future amount to in terms of this show? Is that different artists weighing in with different projects, or is that one project in particular?
It's really looking at, in particular, there is an artist. His name is Johannes Helden. He's also a poet, a Swedish poet and artist, contemporary artist. But his work, you know, particularly kind of rounds out that conversation within the exhibition. And there's one project that he has created where he's created an artificial intelligence, an AI program that essentially creates new species, but talks about their extinction. So they create new species, but then also creates the year of their extinction and kind of describes what they are and why they went extinct. So it's looking, you know, hundreds of years into the future, thinking about evolution, but also the ways in which the moment that we are in now very much encodes the potential for those futures and what, you know, shapes them, what they look like. So it is kind of speculating about what those future evolution will look like, but then also the dangers that exist in this moment to also kind of erase the potentialities of those futures. So there's kind of a little bit of a cautionary tale one might read into that work.
And in this show, is there text that accompanies it or panel discussions? I mean, this is an academic setting. Does that mean there's going to be more exploration of this theme in the show?
Absolutely. That's actually really key and one of the joys for me of working in this environment. Of course, all museums are engaged in knowledge production, but being situated in the university context, the emphasis that's placed on scholarship and more research-based practices is perhaps heightened even further. And so opportunities to connect with faculty, students, and researchers here on campus are very important to us, and kind of to bring their work into the folds of the work that we're doing with the artists that we bring into the museum. So I fully expect, the summer is a little bit of a different moment because much of the student body kind of disperses, but there are other work that happens, in particular a summer institute that we hope to plan that focuses on work that's being done through the natural sciences, through some of the other departments on campus, in field stations across Michigan and elsewhere, tap into those student bodies, the work of those student bodies, and bring them, essentially initiate further research and conversation that then can be presented in the fall semester, as the exhibition will be up for a good 6 months. So we span kind of these different moments within the university's life cycle or yearly cycle.
So Stephen, I'd love to talk a little bit more about really the difference between, it's striking me now, and I've certainly interviewed, gallerists and curators, in different institutions and different places. As I talk to you about this show and you're describing it, there's obviously an academic context that this is in, and artists like the scientists, academics, and other curators and collaborators and academics there are discussing something together. This is quite different than what happens in the commercial world, right? Or even in some of the major museum exhibits in the huge museums, right? The emphasis doesn't seem as much on academic research as here. Just before I move on with the next question, that's correct, isn't it? This is kind of weighted towards research and collaboration, it seems.
100%. And this is, for me, an important way of what it means, important meaning of what it means to work in this context. I worked previously at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago, so a freestanding public institution, and this move into the kind of the university art museum context means a different way of working for me. It's not to say that you can't do those same things at other institutions, but the emphasis that is placed on those kinds of activities in this environment is certainly, to me, feels even more elevated. And the opportunity to bring people, from across different disciplines, really thinking about interdisciplinarity is. I wouldn't say it's easier. It's always a lot of work and a challenge to kind of make those connections and build those bridges. But it's definitely encouraged in a way here that certainly kind of eases those processes, that people are looking for those kinds of opportunities and are excited to kind of move outside of their disciplinary frameworks to think about different ways of working and imagining and what can be produced.
Well, that's what's wonderful about the academic world. And so if I can ask this in comparison, since you've been on both sides, like the museum in Chicago, how do you feel that the commercial world influences the academic world, or vice versa? Because the artists that you're bringing in are also artists that are many times having commercial shows and commercial success. So how do you feel that dovetails with what seems to be kind of more research and academic and aesthetic presentation, which museums typically are, of course, but but still the university museum is even more special in that case. How do those two dovetail, the museum academic presentation and the curated and important world of commercial exhibitions and tours and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly a complicated question.
It is.
I think, one way that I've been trying to position, my work and certainly also the museum as well, is as a place where artists can kind of, to bring their dream projects, to be a generative place to say, what is it that you're working on, or what are the ways in which having this massive research, based institution of the university backing you, what are the things that we could accomplish together? And so, of course, we bring in artworks, pre-existing artworks and artworks from galleries. We work closely with, artist galleries and all of these different networks, donors, different collectors, and all those things. Those are all part of this, the ecosystem of any exhibition or project. But it is also exciting to think that we might be this generative space where we're able to kind of somehow propel artists forward with a project and idea that may not be commercially viable, or at least in this particular moment, that may not be something that is, that kind of could work for a gallery that a gallery would be able to take on, through certain kind of commissioning strains of working. So that of course could, eventually fuel a market. And then there's also ways in which having museum exhibitions in general is, of course, playing into a certain kind of cultural value and creating value in and of itself. And so we're not naive about those different ways that we engage with the market. But I would say that there is kind of, again, perhaps less of an emphasis placed on thinking about economic value versus intellectual or scholarly value of the works that's being produced. And this goes back to your former question where, you know, part of my work is also kind of trying to demystify the fact that artists are also, many artists are also scholars, you know, and I think the ways in which people look at art and think about exhibitions isn't, it's not necessarily readily known, the intellectual rigor and the amount of research that goes into a lot of this work. So trying to kind of really make that better known and understood also diversifies the way that we think about value and meaning, which of course still ties into the monetary markets of the world, but perhaps in a less direct way.
Well, I'm glad you articulated that. It is I know kind of a beast. It's just I talk to so many different artists and curators, and you know sometimes artists are talking about their work as a research project, and it's very involved and academic, and other artists are talking about it as an aesthetic exercise and a kind of, you know, psychological exploration in the studio. And so they're, you know, artists themselves talk to me on both ends of the spectrum. Some, you know, very academic and their work is all research-based, and others, the opposite of that. It's all visual and tactile and experiential. So it's interesting the role that the university plays in that, because that's often what these artists are talking about. They're talking about residencies or kind of collaborative atmospheres where research can happen in depth and in collaboration with other people.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and that's a very exciting way, I think, to work. But it is also, it can be quite precarious as well, because being a generative space means that, you know, a lot of knowing comes through doing, and that can often be a very uncomfortable space, especially when you're thinking about the market. Also thinking about kind of a speculative environment where, until you do something, you know, that's when you start to understand it. It's actually very kind of Deweyan philosophical outlook. But you know, the experience itself is the thing that's important. Until you have that experience, then you don't really understand something. That kind of dovetails with these other considerations in different ways.
I think so, yeah. So the exhibit we're talking about, that's up now or that's about to go up?
That'll go up this summer, open May 30th here at the museum.
And is there anything else you want to say about that show, or should we talk about another project before we go?
Sure, maybe we can talk about another project. I'm thinking, too, now that there's also an exhibition up right now. It's actually quite different in nature, but it opened in September with an Icelandic artist. Her name is Katrin Sigurdóttir. She lives in New York, but it's again a very different way of working, but also thinking about this connection between the local context and also kind of larger more global concerns. But her project is a solo exhibition, but also very much tailored to our museum. You know, I work in it's a Zaha Hadid design building. When it was built in 2012, it was the first standalone building designed and built by Zaha Hadid, in North America at that time, so that's quite remarkable that it's also here in mid-Michigan. But the spaces of the museum are quite challenging to work in, as one can imagine, but that creates a certain dynamic that is very important. And so Ketrin's work for this exhibition very much responds to the space, and in a really beautiful, poetic way, kind of takes the space and kind of absorbs it into the artwork in a way that's quite remarkable.
That's interesting. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I interviewed her quite a while ago after she was in the Venice Biennial, and is a fascinating artist. And to compare her work, which is also kind of architecturally based with, I'm so glad you mentioned that, you know, a museum that it sounds like the Guggenheim and other museums that are done by, I mean, you know, now she is or was, you know, a kind of star architect.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes the building itself takes priority over mm-hmm. hanging the work, ironically. Right?
Yes. I mean, it is such a strong, the personality of this museum, this architecture is extremely, extremely strong. I mean, it's really a sculpture object. It really is a kind of a sculpture of sorts. And so it guides my hand from a curatorial perspective. It guides my hand strongly in the artists that I work with, but for me, I think that's quite exciting. Part of the draw in coming here was to kind of move away from the kind of the white cube, you know, the false neutrality of these white cube spaces, to really work in a space that, you know, creates a different parameters of working. And so, the volumes of the spaces, there's no right angles in the building other than the doorways. So like these really different, you know, optical sight lines, like optical environments that are kind of can be a bit disorienting, but also quite exciting, I think, for artists to respond to. And so it's almost a prerequisite that artists have to come and see the building and see the spaces that they're going to be working in or showing their work in, because you can't, there's no way to understand it otherwise than kind of being here.
Right, to not interact with the building, to not dialogue with the building itself,
yes,
as an artist. I mean, everything must be site-specific in a sense.
To a degree, absolutely, absolutely. Because if you, and that's where you're, you know, sometimes it's hard to take pre-existing work and you put it into this building. If it's not thoughtfully considered and done, it can disappear to a certain degree. Or like the artwork, you know, like it just doesn't, there are ways in which it may not serve the artwork well, and so it really keeps you on your toes in a way that, you know, honestly, I've been here 4 years, and there are many things I'm still trying to figure out and trying, and maybe not always succeeding in, but that's partly why I'm just so enamored with what Katrin was able to achieve with us, with her exhibition here. It's really quite stunning, and it somehow respects the building, but like I said, it absorbs the spaces and somehow elevates the artwork even further.
Stephen, I'm so glad we talked about that show, and I hope that the listeners who are in the area or can travel there will see that, because it sounds wonderful, as does the summer show. I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading these days? What's on your nightstand or scattered about?
You know what, I've read it a number of years ago, but I'm returning to it now. It's a book by Roberto Bolaño titled Antwerp. It's a very short book, but it was actually published posthumously after his death. But it had a very kind of important effect on me a number of years ago, and so I've decided to return to it and see what it might offer in its second reading.
Stephen, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.